If you order it, you're not going to wear it.
Yeah.
That's easy.
You know, just...
Can we start?
Say that... we are very grateful that Zheng Tai spent the time and effort preparing two talks. And one was given yesterday for to prepare for today's talk. And so that here he is telling us about topological basis matter.
Thanks. Actually, I don't think it's worked pretty well, so I exhausted all the students, some of them. But anyway, thanks for the invitation. Actually, I did spend some time, actually. I think, actually, as always, when we teach, you know, the lecturer learns more than the audience, probably. So I learned a lot while preparing. So anyway, I will tell you about this topological phase of matter, and I will show the picture again, why I choose this picture. So, I think I'll start with some general things. So, I think there are, many, many predictions, and most of them probably are wrong, like, there's a prediction today will be the end of the world, and probably didn't happen. And there are also many predictions which are right, but probably most of them are not useful. So there are very few which are both right and useful. So potentially, we have this prediction from quantum mechanics, which is, according to the theory, we can build a quantum computer, and that's the deduction. And also, we know that physicists predict that there are so-called non-Abelian anions, which I will explain to you later what they are. And actually, there's a theorem, which I think I have some rule in the theorem, which is, actually, prediction 2 implies prediction 1, which if you have an non-Abelian anions, they can build a quantum computer in theory. And so the most important thing we'll talk about actually will be anions. So just first, it's kind of a contradiction, as I said here, which anions have some kind of a localized, but it's non-local properties or something. So it's an encode non-local properties of a quantum system, but on the other hand, it's localized as a particle. Okay, so that's what the anion. Now what you really should think of is like a fermion, like an electron. You know, electron is also kind of the most mysterious things, actually. It's a particle, so it can be localized. Actually, I think the experiment, go as small as you can, you won't see a size of electron. But on the other hand, if you have any two electrons in the world, they're always identical, and they always have the minus one associated with each other, which is very mysterious. If you really ask a good physicist, if they are honest, they should admit they don't really understand any, Fermi. It's just completely counterintuition. So an anion is actually kind of easier than fermion. It's kind of between boson and fermion. It's kind of like a finite version of fermions. So, think about this, what I said, as a localized, non-local property, actually, kind of my favorite theorems in mathematics, I don't know which one, is the Poincaré-Hopf index theorem and the Gauss-Bonnet-Chern theorem. Now, those two theorems actually represent exactly the kind of things I'm thinking, which is they both compute the Euler characteristic, which is a non-local property of a manifold. But on the hand, the computation or the information is encoded in a local thing. In the Poincaré-Hopf index theorem is encoded in the degree of these singularities. It's localized. And in the Gauss-Bonnet theorem is localized in the curvature, the local curvature. So that's the kind of thing I want to tell you, basically. It's that in physics now, there are these so-called topological properties of quantum systems, which is really encoded by anions.
Professor, this is just for my cultural improvement or something. What is the difference between Gauss-Bonnet and Gauss-Bonnet-Chern?
I think Gauss-Bonnet refers to two dimension, and the Chern refers to high dimension. This is the integral of Fabian, curvature is all characteristic. It's just like the Poincaré two dimension, half is the high dimension version. I think it's exactly the same. That's my understanding. Might be wrong.
That's also my understanding.
So I have a vote of confidence. Okay. That's my status. It's too high. So now let me repeat some of the things I said yesterday, which is that would be pretty quick. So quantum systems for me is just a pair, which is you have a Hilbert space and you have a Hamiltonian. If you really want to do physics, this Hamiltonian will be local. But this is a very subtle thing. I will probably say a few words later. So it's always a question, what do you mean by local? So here's an example I mentioned yesterday. The first one is you take any fixed number of tensor product of the two-dimensional Hilbert space, C2, and then you write out the Hamiltonian, which is a Hermitian operator, which is you write a sigma z acting on the ith tensor factor, and then tensor identity both sides if there are many tensor factors. And in quantum physics, you always want to know what is the ground state. And in this case, the ground state is just the basis vector 1 tensor many times. And C2 has two bases using the Braquet notation, which is the 0 and the 1. And another famous example, which I spent almost half an hour yesterday, which is the Torrey code, which is the it's basically the linear combination of the Z2 homology. And I think I will show the Hamiltonian again, but I won't really say too much about it. But this is just one of the examples of many, many top-order quantum field theories. And in mathematics, it's called trifold-real type TQFTs, and in physics, it's called Levin-Wien model. And then there's another, I didn't prepare this one for yesterday, I didn't have time to go over, which is this Hofstadter, I think it's a Hofstadter model. It's a story of a churn numbers. And so I will show you the Hamiltonian for this model too. So here's, imagine the Torrey code. So this is a very beautiful model. If you take the Hamiltonian to be this one, which is, there's a quantum system. First, you have a Hilbert space, which is you take the torus, you draw a solution by square lattice, and then you do tensor C2 on each edge. So that's how many tensor factors. This physics call this a spin. So you put a spin on each edge, and then you write out Hermitian operator. I have this G and G. You can ignore them, just set them to 1. And then for each vertex V, you write down sigma Z, which is the Pauli matrix 0, 1, 1, 0, 0, minus 1, on these four tensor factors and identity on the rest. And then for each phase, you write down sigma X on these four tensor factors and sigma and identity on the rest. And then the claim is this Hamiltonian can be completely solved in the sense of you know all the eigenspace of the eigenvalues. So that's what I mean by exactly solved. And another example, which is this Hofstadter model, which is the following. This is actually very complicated. So I'll just, I can explain it in more details later if you are puzzled by this model. So what it is this is written in the so-called second quantized language, which in physics, you always take a first. You take a classical system, sometimes you don't have one, but if you have a classical system, you can quantize, and that's called the first quantization, then you do the second quantization. There's a famous law which says second quantization, or first quantization is a mystery, and second quantization is a functor. So, but really what it means is the second quantization actually is just a bunch of algebras. So this is written in second quantized language, so what it means is the following. So, it's just a bunch of operators. So, the Hilbert space is also a tensor product of C2. Now you don't put the degree freedom on edge, you put on vertices. So each vertex, you get a factor C2. And now the C2 has a different interpretation. The Torrey code is interpreted as a spin on each edge. And here the C2 is interpreted on the vertex. You can have a fermion or not have a fermion. It's a box. It's just a box holding a fermion or not a fermion, or electron if you want to think. But I want the electron to have no spin, so just 0, 1. If you have spin, you can have up and down. There are four states, but now I only have two states. So that's an interpretation. Basically, you imagine at each vertex you have a box, and then the box can have something there or not have something, and each of these configurations is a basis for this Hilbert space. Oops, sorry. For this Hilbert space. Okay, that's your basis. And that's actually, you can see, that's the basis for this Hilbert space. And now I run a Hamiltonian, which is like this. And you can ignore this term. If you know the term, this is called the number operator, which is just this V is a vertex. if you act in the, you know, if you take a basis element here, and you act by this combination AV dagger, and that's give you zero if there are no particle at that vertex, one if there is one. So that's for the number operator. And then this one here, if you are really training in physics, now you can see particle hopping already. So what this interpretation is, this is called the fermion annihilation. So A is for annihilation, which means you annihilate a particle at this vertex V prime, and then you create another one at the vertex V. Okay, so this is the annihilation, this is creation. So you should think of physically, if you have this basis, which is a configuration of particles and an empty set, and if you acting on this by this term, that will hop, if this V prime has a particle and will be destroyed, then hop into the other side. But when you hop to the other side, if there is one there, you send the thing to zero, because this is fermion, they have a Pauli exclusion principle, but it's empty, you just hop there. And so then this Hamiltonian tells you that there's an amplitude for this to happen. So now this is a physical picture. Basically, you imagine there's a configuration of fermions, and they hop around with each other, and then there's amplitude. And that's giving you some kind of physical system, and you want to know what is the ground state. And that's turned out extremely hard. Depends on how you choose. Of course, if you choose this to be zero, that's too simple. But in general, this is a matrix, and the one which is physical is this. You don't want this to be, so this is the first thing about locality. You don't want this to have a long range. You want to hop only one step. You don't want to hop to the moon. So therefore, this number is zero if they're not the nearest neighbor of to this V. Okay. And then if it's nearest neighbor to V, and then it's either one if you hop this direction, and it's this exponential e to 2 pi I m phi if you hop up and down, and there's a sign there. Okay. So that's the Hamiltonian. And basically what it is these operators form a Clifford algebra. And then the Hilbert space here is just a representation, a module of this Clifford algebra. And then for each particular representation, this becomes a matrix. And that's your Hermitian matrix. So that basically encodes more information than just a Hamiltonian. So now I mentioned this already, so there's supposed to be all physics is local. So what it means is the following. If you have a quantum system, which in my terminology is just a Hilbert space, a Hamiltonian, and it has a decomposition either into a tensor product or into a direct sum. And this really is for bosonic system, and this is for fermionic system. And then when you talk about this Hamiltonian, you want this to be local, means the following. And I think my two examples perfectly illustrate this thing. So for the toric code, remember, it's not identity except for this fourth tensor factor, or this fourth tensor factor. So that's local. And for the fermion picture, it's a direct sum, and you only hop one step, no long-range hop. That means it's local. Okay. And so that's actually it's the first thing you need to think. If you want to write down a theory which you claim is physical, and you need to write down a local Hamiltonian. And if it's a boson, you want to be acting on a small patch. If it's fermion, you want to hop very short range. So now I want to change a little bit about the terminology, which is a quantum system itself is not kind of, you know, that interesting. Really, you want to think about a theory. So I would call an n-dimensional theory if it is not just a single quantum system. Actually, it's a Hamiltonian schema, in the sense that if you give me an n-dimensional space, a manifold Y, and maybe maybe some extra data like a acceleration of the manifold, you should be able to write down a quantum system. And then what you should think is that as this, think of a triangulation, as this triangulation becomes finer and finer, that's go to the so-called thermodynamical limit. So it's a finite process. So in that sense, I call it an n-dimensional theory, means that you have a rule to write down a Hamiltonian for each triangulation of an n-manifold, and as you refine, that should have a very defined limit. Now, that's very difficult to get, actually. We know, you know, in reality, it's very difficult to get a theory which has a continuous limit, like a QCD as one example. And I think QED already has trouble. So that's what I mean by a theory, a quantum theory. So it really means an n-dimensional Hamiltonian schema. So now I'll just quickly tell you what is a phase diagram. It's not a mathematical definition, just to illustrate. So if you have a set of quantum systems, it's either by some parameter set, and then if you choose a subset, which is called them admissible ones, you know, this is the theory which you think they have a legal have a right to be studied. Actually, the one which you delete is also very interesting. I use C for critical. This is called the critical theories. That's like you study like water. You have solid and the water, and then this critical theory is the one which, like, you go to Las Vegas, you both Alaska, you see both, you know, water floating with ice. That's the critical theory. So it's the transition. So and then physicists basically what they do is they write out Hamiltonian. And there are lots of parameters, and then they can study how to divide them into so-called phases, which the one they have the same properties. And that means I introduce something called equivalence class mathematically, and then I divided them into equivalent classes. And then a phase diagram is just this admissible theories divided into equivalence classes. And I think arguably this is one of the most famous phase diagram. Okay, I think it's the only physical work which is its thesis, which give you this phase diagram. So what is this picture? So this is, if you remember the Hamiltonian I wrote down, there are two parameters. There's a mu, and there's a phi. And this is called a chemical potential, and this is called the flux through, a uniform flux through each unit cell. And this thing here is really referred to the square, which from 0 to 1, now from 0 to 1 and mu, it's periodic. So that's the theory. And then you can ask, how do I characterize each phase, you know, with the theory? And that's a very, very difficult thing. And this particular case, this is worked out. And what you call a phase is start from the Hamiltonian, and actually you can get a Chern number out of it. So what you do, you take the Hamiltonian and leave on the torus. We take the triangulation final, you get a continuous theory on the torus. And then you Fourier transform. You go to the momentum torus. And when you go to the momentum torus, and then the Hamiltonian really decoupled. So now you can look at the momentum torus. And you have Hamiltonian HK depends on, so K is a point here. And for each of this K, you have a Hamiltonian, you find its ground state is one dimensional. And then that means over this torus, there's a line bundle, okay, of ground state. And then you compute the first Chern class and evaluate as a number. And that's a Chern number. And there are infinite many. And this each of color represent a definite Chern number. And there are infinite many here. And that's a famous phase diagram and the butterfly. And actually, it's a fractal, actually. So
way to the right and way to the left.
That's turn number zero.
I see. So part of the diagram.
They're part of the diagram, but it's the trivial phase. Yeah. There are no interesting physics in that sense. So this is part of the phase diagram. And it, of course, it's very difficult. I don't actually believe this is a mathematical statement. I'm not 100% sure.
Oh, so you didn't compute out all the like equivalent classes or all the
trend
numbers.
You know, my study is, you know, physics never really give you anything mathematical. You know, they probably did some numerical computation and then, you know, put up this picture. Uh-huh. I think this case, you know, I'm not 100% sure. You know, it's normally if you write down a generic Hamiltonian, there are almost no mathematical theory for you to say what is the ground state. And in this particular case, I tend to believe maybe because there's a famous theorem due to Leib, which is kind of the only theory, which is in this case of flux, the uniform flux is the ground state. But there you need a bipart lattice, and I'm not 100% sure this one belongs to, but so I'm not 100% sure the status. It might be a mathematical picture, it might be a physical picture.
You have two axes, are they labeled H, the y-axis?
This axis is, I think it's the chemical potential, which is you take the ground state energy divided by the number of particles. That's the chemical potential, which is how much energy costs you when you add one more particle. Now this x here is the phi. That you, this you imagine actually this is a, what it is an electron system, and they have a perpendicular magnetic field. and has a uniform flux through each unit cell, and that's this number 5. And that's the one we, so that's this vertical axis. So I think there's a fourfold symmetry of this thing, which you can easily see by looking at the Hamiltonian. So that's the famous phase diagram. So basically, the game is that you write down a really physical theory that all those parameters, what you're really interested in is the phase diagram, which is, you know, what is the phase? And then the next equally important thing is, if you go from one phase to another, what is the transition, the critical phase? And actually, if you know that in quantum field theory, there are only two big classes of theory which are rigorous. One is conformal field theory, the other is topological quantum field theory. Actually, conformal field theory really describes the critical thing between phases. So that's where they are interesting. So now let me start to tell you what is topological phase of matter. I tried yesterday, and I can defend myself why we don't have a definition, because this is really the beginning of kind of a new, I would say a new era in condensed matter physics, because normally condensed matter physics means just improve life, you know, we invent, you know, technologies. But there's a new trend in condensed matter physics, which is want to compete with high energy physics like string theory. You want to understand the universe, and the principle, the philosophy there is called emergence. It's starting from Philip Anderson, which is you know, high energy physics is from bottom, from top to bottom, and the emergence ideas from bottom to top, which is all the beautiful physical theory come from something underlying and then emerged. So I think the best rigorous thing for this discussion is topological phases matter. And I will show you actually in fractal quantum hall that how this works, which is basically you start with a bunch of electrons, and it's a very dirty system, and eventually you come off with something very beautiful mathematically, like a Trans-Simon theory. So that's the philosophy. There are lots of caveats here, but I just want to say one thing. So basically, my claim is, if you want to study topological phase of matter mathematically, the first thing you do is to study topological quantum field theory. And then I want to claim, it's almost true, each unitary topological quantum field theory will give you a topological phase of matter. And I want to emphasize unitary because, like we know, the most famous quantum topological quantum field theory was supposed to be Donaldson theory, which is actually Witten wrote the first paper and the title. And that actually is not unitary. And there's some other problem with that theory too. But so that's very important. So it's a unitary topological quantum field theory. And I think the new one, N equals 4, supersymmetric one, is not unitary either. And another thing I want to say is a stable. This is a little hard to explain. So, for example, if you talk to physicists, the topological incident people in KITP, they claim, I will mention this later, in one dimension there are no topological phase of matter, all trivial. But on the other hand, we know there are lots of 1 plus 1 TKFTs, you know, classified by community Frobenius algebra. And there's a contradiction here. What happens? And I think I figured out with Xiaogang Wen, the point is that all those 1 plus 1 topological quantum field theories, they are not stable. So that's why they're not qualified as a phase of matter. But they do if you input symmetry. So that's the word.
Is this a theorem?
What do you mean? With this definition?
This is a definition.
This is a definition. I don't want to make it into... I think the subject is... just started, you know, in the sense of we really don't know what is a topological quantum field theory, what is a topological phase. There are definitions which I'll give you, but I will tell you why I won't say that the answer. Okay, so let me, I think I already said this. So basically, what I'm saying is that mathematics, the first thing to think is if you want to think about topological phase of matter, what you really should think about is unitary topological quantum field theories. Now that's a well-defined mathematical concept in certain dimension. So what happens, suppose you have a quantum theory which you claim is topological, and then what you do, you take the Hilbert space, depends on your space, you decompose into energy eigenstates, and then you pick up the ground state manifold, so just all the ground states, and that's giving you a functor from a manifold to a Hilbert space. So just assign any fixed dimension manifold Y to a Hilbert space. And then this rule, actually, if it's part of a topological quantum field theory, will be part of a topological quantum field theory if the theory is topological. Okay. So it's, you can use this as a definition, but I don't want to because there are subtle things which is missed by all you tickle the ground state. But just to convince you that we do have something to study, so I want to say, at least in two-dimensional or n-dimensional, there's one version of topological quantum field theory which is well-defined. Actually, this is due to Attia. Actually, I really should be called this Attia Siegel, but it's really come from conformal field theory, which Siegel has a definition as a functor. So what it is actually a very simple definition. So what is it? N plus one dimensional topological quantum field theory. It's just a symmetric monoidal functor from the category of n plus one manifolds to finite dimensional vector spaces. And you must worry, why you have to say finite dimensional? Can you just map to infinite dimensional? The axiom is so strong. If you say it's infinite dimensional, it becomes finite dimensional. So it's extra thing. So what do you, actually, this is a definition, actually. And the only thing which I didn't define for you is this this body's category. So this category has objects which are just oriented close n manifolds. What are the morphisms between two? And if you have two n-dimensional manifolds, and a body will be n plus one manifolds between them, and the only subtlety is that you want this to be an equivalence class, which is you have to allow them to identify the bodism if they are diffeomorphic relative to boundary. Otherwise, you don't get a category. So that's your first category. And actually, it's a tensor category because you can take two manifolds, take the disjoint union. Now, that's the tensor product of the objects. And then there's a unit. It's a monoidal function. There's a unit. And the unit is the empty manifold. Actually, the empty set is very beautiful. It's a manifold of any dimension. Now, that's very important in quantum theory. That's not a joke, actually. The whole point is that in quantum theory, we really don't know what is the vacuum, what is an empty set. So it's not completely a joke. But if for mathematical convenience, the empty set, this is a manifold of any dimension you want. And that serves as the tensor unit. And I won't really do the unravel of the definition. If you really want to do this, then you can really go through the definition. You see the empty manifolds always get a one-dimensional Hilbert disjoint union, goes to tensor product, orientation reversing, go to dual vector space, and then there's a body which is, if you take a cylinder, it gets identity from the bottom to top, and if you get the composition of two more bodies and the linear map just compose. Actually, this is the place which I said is no anomaly, because normally the like a Chern-Simon theory does not satisfy this axiom. And what is not true is that if we do this, glue the bodism and then do this thing, it not equal the composition. It equal the composition up to an overall abelian phase. So that's this thing. And if you want example, a 2 plus 1 theory is very simple, which you take a surface Y and you take the Z2 homology and then take the linear span. And that will be the easiest topological quantum field theory, which is the toric code, actually. So that's actually a mathematical definition. And then in 2 plus 1, we have also something called Schick-Entry FTKP. They don't fit into this definition, but there's a way to make it into a projective functor. And I should also say, there's a famous paper by Jack Valori with the title Classification of Topological Quantum Field Theory. It seems like all I need to know is already in the paper, but that's actually not true. The meaning of classification is completely different. For him, his classification just means that he reduced to a problem in algebra or in category theory. And for me, it's just like the following thing. You say, oh, you want to classify homology theory, you just need to input the coefficient, ring or something. And that's what Laurie would say classification, just it's a ring. But what I want to know is how many rings are there? So there's a totally different level of classification. So his so-called classification is not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for, like, if you say the rings, it's given by the group algebra, finite group, I want to know if you fix the number of elements of the group, how many different finite groups. That's in one sense of classification. So it's totally different.
In your example, can I ask, when I have a bordism, what morphism do I, what linear map do I get between these?
Oh, this example?
Yeah.
It's a little bit complicated. It's more or less, 2 is more or less minus 2 to the first Betti number of the three manifold borders with some normalizations multiplied. It depends on the dimension, but more or less it's just a trivial thing, just multiply. Okay, that's actually a very difficult question to answer.
Okay.
Because the construction, I cannot do it like in a very simple way. You have to go through the general construction. Actually, John Morgan asked exactly the same question when I talked about his Simon Center. I did try afterwards to answer it in an elementary way, but I couldn't do it. So now I want to switch gears, which is, I think it's my American education, which is, it's always good to have examples to study when you develop theories. And I really think we don't have far from a good theory of a top-order quantum field theory. So let me tell you, the most famous real top-particle phase of matter, which means top-particle quantum field theories in nature. And it's called the fractal quantum Hall states, which I mentioned yesterday, but I will say something slightly different. So the quantum Hall state is kind of the most amazing physical systems. So I will give you a little bit of history later on. So basically, there are two Nobel Prizes already. And one is the discovery of an integer quantum Hall in 1980 by Wang Klinsen. And now there's something called top-particle insulators. So these integer quantum Hall states are renamed called Chern insulators for the reason they are described by Chern numbers. And then there's fractal quantum Hall. And this is discovered by these three gentlemen and Arthur Gosbeck is on campus. His other paper cited for the Nobel Prize, but he was not given the Nobel Prize. And the Nobel Prize is given to these two people, and lastly, a theorist. And then there's a 5-half, this is for 1/3. And then there's a 5-half, which is Station Q is working on. And you ask, what's the corresponding top-order quantum field theory? They are more or less just Wittgenstein-Simon theories. So I will try to explain. And then there's another one, which is the top-particle superconductor P plus IP. This is actually also a very interesting system. I'm not an expert on this, I won't say much. And then there's a recently one, a top-particle phase, which is all the excitement around the world, which is a discovery of a so-called two-dimensional top-particle incident of the Mercury telluride. And actually this one, I will mention this in the classification, it's really a free fermion system, like the integer quantum Hall, but with a symmetry. So let me tell you first the quantum Hall state. This is a relatively very simple system, actually. So this is a real, this is from the Nobel Prize website. So what it is it's based, so I don't know if you can read it. So one side, this is just a semiconductor, one is a luminar arsenide, the other just a gallium arsenide. So they're just semiconductors. And then the chief, Daniel Chu and Stormer, actually Stormer when he was a postdoc, he developed this incredible technology, which is you can set up a potential difference from here to here. People draw like this. So what it is that the electrons from this, like the top or the bottom, there's a potential difference between the top and the bottom. And the electron will, of course, want to look for the Lewis energy, so will travel from one side to the other. But the technology is so beautiful that when the electron travel to the interface, the difference is gone. So the electron is suspended in the middle. Okay, so once you go to the middle, the difference to drive you from bottom to top is gone. So therefore what happens is just electrons suspended in the middle of the two semiconductors. So what you really should imagine now, mathematically, is a pure sheet of two-dimensional electrons. And that's the technology. And so now you can ask a very simple question, really. The Hamiltonian, the fundamental Hamiltonian is really known. It's atoms, electrons, and it's QED, so just write down the Coulomb interaction and everything. And then you say, well, just give the computer to look for the ground state, and that should give you the state. Unfortunately, the number of electrons is this order. It's 10 to the 11th per centimeter squares. And the computer can solve this Hamiltonian probably for 13 or 20. There's no way at all to get to that range. It's the end of the universe. So therefore, physicists say, well, that's impossible. So what's the game? And the game is you guess. Okay, so you guess what the ground state looks like. And so now let me back up a little bit to tell you this quantum hole, and then let me tell you, you know, what the guess is. So actually, quantum hole has a very interesting history. So it starts 1879, when a graduate student Edwin Hall discovered a mistake in Maxwell's book. And you should read the paper, and I won't tell you the story because it's all in the paper. So the paper is how many pages? 4 or 5 pages. And there are no mathematics. It's published in American Journal of Mathematics. And it's published 4 data points. And the first 1 or 2 pages tell you the story, how he, you know, did this experiment. So it's an experimental paper, and it told a story about the whole thing, and it's published in American Journal of Mathematics. And you can ask, you know, how that can happen. And the one explanation is, at that time there are no physics. And so there are no physics journals to put this thing in, so there's only math. I don't know if that's true or not, but anyway, so that's the paper. So now let me tell you what Hall discovered. So this is the, I think this is also from the Nobel citation site. So what Hall discovered is the following. So if you take a sheet of gold, okay, and it's really just a sheet of gold, a metal, and then you put a perpendicular magnetic field to it, and then you run a current in this direction, the x direction, and then the claim is there's a voltage difference in the perpendicular direction. Okay, so that's what Hall discovered. And what he come up with is a Hall resistance, which is you take the voltage difference of the transverse direction divided by the current in this direction, and it's always a linear law. And this is the original data of Hall replotted by Stormer. There are only these 4 points. That's what actually Hall discovered. And then he claimed this is linear. And this turns out to be extremely important, actually, because there are lots of applications for the 100 years. So now let me move on to 100 years later. Von Kleinsen in 1980 discovered the integer quantum hole, which is the following. Actually, the data was published in 3 years before the discovery, which is they published the data, but the data in a terrible combination, so they don't see the real physics. So I think Kleinsen said everybody has a chance to discover the Nobel Prize, make a Nobel Prize discovery for 3 years, but nobody did until later, 3 years later, he reprocessed the data. So what he discovers is the following. So when you make this magnetic field bigger, and you make the temperature lower, and that's the progress of technology, and this linear law is broken. You don't have a linear dependence anymore. You have this beautiful, beautiful plateau. And not only is flat, and it's flat as the Hall resistance equal this formula here. I will just write this as such an incredible thing. So the Hall resistance is nu inverse h over e squared. And the h is the Planck constant. The e is the electrical charge. And this nu is an integer out to an error to the 10 to the negative 9. Okay. This precision is the second best in history of a physical experiment. The only one which beat this is QED. That's like 10 to the negative 14. But that's need to compute like a 1,000 Feynman diagrams in order to get that precision. And this is such a dirty thing. Just take a piece of gold and you measure to get this precision. So that's become the standard for resistance. And of course, you know, this is so impressive, so the Nobel Prize pretty fast, 5 years later. So you get a Nobel Prize. So move on a few years, 1982, and Stormer and Daniel Tree used a sample made by Gossard, and they discovered this nu not only can be integer, can also be a fraction. And the first degree is 1/3. And Stormer recalled that actually Daniel Tree at the moment just said, oh, must be quarks because of 1/3. And then Laughlin has a very famous explanation which I will tell you later. And that's actually got the Nobel Prize for the discovery and explanation of this quantum hole. And so now you can see how many fractions we have. Actually, I list them all. I think the published one, there are maybe a few more which people are not comfortable to publish. So there are about 80 of them. And that's all, actually. And if you look at them, you will see one thing, which is all the ones I listed had all denominator. And only those three actually have even denominators. And this is the one, and those two are really the same physics. And this one is not clear. So basically, every fraction has a story to be told. The only two fractions which are really studied is 1/3 and 5/2. 1/3 is the Nobel Prize, and 5/2 is the one people are working on right now. And the rest all have theories, but it's far from clear. So now you can ask, you know, for each of these plateaus, how do we model this? And first I should tell you what's the Feynman fraction new. And that's a very simple number. So you have a two-dimensional sheet of electrons. You can know and find out actually how many electrons in this metal. And then you have a perpendicular magnetic field, and this is measured by how many flux lines through this thing. And you take the ratio of the two. Okay. So for 1/3, that just means each electron has three flux lines go through it. And if a 5/2 means five electrons share two flux lines. So that's the number. So this single number is a good indication of what the phase is, although it's not, that's not unique to determine the phase. So so now you can ask, you know, what the electrons are doing there. And I remember my daughter asked me, you know, at one point, you know, what are you doing for research? I said, you know, basically I'm torturing electrons. So think about, you know, this system. The magnetic field is like a 30 Tesla. And the temperature is like a millikelvin, you know, like a 20 millikelvin, that's too high. So you have to below 10 millikelvin. And the electrons are so frustrated, so they have to go to communism because they have to collect, you know, collaborate with each other. So that's what is happening, actually. So here's my guess. So this is a slide I steal from Matthew Fisher, which is, you know, say, you know, what they are doing? Well, they are dancing. And unfortunately, we are here, they are there, we cannot see. And if you really want to describe in words, and really the electrons have some kind of long-range entanglement, which means they have to collaborate with each other, and the physical world means they have to interact with each other. They cannot ignore each other. Okay, so they have to have interaction. But they have a very rigid way to interact. And if you come up with the semi-classical picture, you can see that first electrons are like, you know, don't like, you know, they're antisocial, so they want to stay away from each other as much as possible. That's the Pauli exclusion principle. And also, electron actually moves in circle. That's the Lorentzian force. You know, just write down Lorentzian motion in circle. And then there's a very rigid rule how they move, actually, the classical picture. So my friend, Xiaogang Wen, actually made this whole subject famous. He invented a word called top particle order. We have no clue what that means. So it just means there's something new which you don't know how to describe. And it has to do with top-order quantum field theory. He was a student of Witten, actually. So that's basically, you know, you can imagine, actually mathematically or physically, here's the Nobel Prize, you know, work. So Laughlin said, well, we want to describe the ground state. It's hopeless to, you know, to really solve the Hamiltonian. So let's guess what the ground state looks like. So for each Zi, so each electron is in the plane, so there's a position called that position Zi. And then you write down a function which describes the distribution of the electrons. And there's a Gaussian factor here you can ignore. That just says the fractional form of the whole liquid is a finite thing. It does not go to infinity. So that's the cutoff. And then you have Zi minus Zj to the third power for 1/3. Okay? And that's actually a very simple function. He wrote this down. And then what happened next is very amazing. So he used the computer to compute the energy of this ground state for 6 electrons. And then he compared with the real ground state energy. They are like 90% match or something. then they conclude that must be the real thing. I always felt you cannot believe that. 6 electrons versus 10 to the 11. And you get a match of 90% and then you declare victory. And if you think about harder, it's really amazing. Because there are uncountable many choices of the ground state. How you can even come up with something close? Not to say 90%, 50%. That's already a victory. So, and actually, it turns out this is extremely, extremely successful. And I won't tell the five half story. There's a similar story which we are working on now. So I think due to time, I will skip this slide. So basically, if I want more or something else. So Laughlin had this huge success, which got him the Nobel Prize. So which basically now people start to think, for each of these plateau, you will have a wave function to describe it. And how do you guess? And have a very simple form, which is always a polynomial, and then multiply something else. And this Gaussian factor will always be the same, so you can drop that. So therefore, all you need to look at is the polynomial. Okay? So therefore, you can just easily come up with all the conditions you need to from physics, and then just ask, which polynomial will be a possible ground state of a fractal quantum Hall state. And Xiaogang Wen and I developed a theory to study them. And basically, if you know conformal field theory, those polynomials are not a random thing. They are conformal blocks in conformal field theory. And then there's a holographic principle. If the boundary is a conformal field theory, and the boundary is a top part of quantum field theory. So therefore, you can infer from the ground state wave function a conformal block of a conformal field theory, and you infer the top particle state in the so-called bulk, or the inside, is a top part of quantum field theory. If you do this physical exercise, you will get this theorem that top particle properties of so-called abelian fractal quantum Hall is given by Chern-Simon theory with the abelian gated group. And the conjecture is that for these particular fractions, they are given by SU2 level K. And the only thing I want you to notice is that all those numbers are between 2 and 3, I think. That's called the second nano level. And that's the one which actually potentially have something interesting called non-abelian anions, which I will explain next. So that's actually, I call it physical theory, which means that not only you have a numerical proof, that's basically a mathematical proof, and you also have experimental data to show this is the case. And a conjecture really means that we are still working on this. So now I want to say a few words more about something else. So I will come back to the quantum Hall. So basically, in this game of top particle physical matter, quantum Hall is the system to study. And in all the physics conditions right now for top particle things, you basically want to rediscover quantum Hall physics in another system which you don't have so low temperature and so big magnetic field. And that's a huge success. You want to do a room temperature quantum Hall state. That's kind of a dream, like a high TC. So that's the game. And there's some success. One is this so-called top particle physical free fermion systems. And this is basically top particle insulators. And then there's this two-dimensional thing which I talk about. And this is corresponding to Schwarz type top particle quantum field theories, including the Witten Chern-Simon theories. And then actually there's another type of top particle quantum field theories which I really think there should be some relevance to reality, which is the Witten type, like a Donaldson theory, top particle quantum field theories. I already told you they are bad, they are not unitary. But there's some ways to get this work. And the thing which you want to give up is they are not unitary because they are Lorentzian environment. But if you give up Lorentzian environment, which in conditional metaphysics people don't care, then you can make it unitary. So there are possibilities. So now let me just tell you the free fermion, because this is a beautiful success of Alexei Kitaev. So if you write down the most general free fermion system, this is basically, I told you, is the electron hopping operator. You just think of electron hop with a certain amplitude. And then it turns out if you write down this Hamiltonian, it's a bad way to write it down, because once you write this down, this Hamiltonian has a U1 symmetry, which means if you multiply this by EI theta, this one be multiply EI theta bar, they cancel each other, so therefore this Hamiltonian has a symmetry. Once a Hamiltonian has a symmetry, then it's illegal to break it. You have to keep the symmetry. So therefore, for the most general system, you want to break this U1 symmetry, so you write using so-called Majorana operators. This is just another basis of the Clifford algebra. If you write down, this is labeled by a matrix, and if you write down this, and then you can ask, if this thing has certain condition which is local and a gap, how many different phases we have for free fermions which are topological? The beautiful answer is by Kitaev, there are 10 classes, and if you look at this table, I won't explain too much, but what it is this is Bott periodicity. This is complex K-theory, this is real K-theory. The claim is that if you just take the Hamiltonian I wrote down in the last slides, and then the claim is if you draw the phase diagram, or you want to study the phase, and then each phase, if you contract the homotopy type, will be on one phase boxes. It's eight periodic, actually. If you go this direction eight times, it's come back. If you go this time eight times, it's come back. And that's classified everything for free fermions, which are topological. So that's a complete success. And I want to point out two boxes. One is the first row, there's a two-dimensional, that's the integer quantum Hall, that's the Chern insulators. So there's this is the Chern number. If it's not the integer, actually it's a torsor. And then there's this mercury toroid. Like this is the famous topological insulator predicted by Shou-Chun Zhang and his collaborators, and it started from Charlie King, and this actually got them the Berkeley Prize for next year. And if you don't know the Berkeley Prize in kinetic matter, that's the equivalent of a Veblen Prize in geometry. So Charlie King and Shou-Chun Zhang, an experimental people guy, got the Berkeley Prize for this box here. So it's the mercury toroid. So now let me just think I have probably 5 minutes. So I think I want to explain one thing. So I want to explain the next possible classification, which we made progress. I work on this, which is we study. So this table classified every dimension and every possible symmetry class. So, it's a complete classification. And the next one is I only do two dimension. And they have to have anions. And then I want to explain what is an anion, but this is something I mentioned at the beginning. So an anion is basically a particle. If you do exchange, it won't be plus or minus one. If it's plus one, it's boson. If it's minus one, that's a fermion. And any means that the EI theta, the theta can be anything. And that's due to Frank-Weyl check. So that's the idea of anion. And then basically anion give you representation of the Braid group. And the interesting thing is that the elementary excitation of one-third is predicted to be anion. And this is basically accepted. So that's why they get a Nobel Prize. And so that's what I said. So what I want to point out is this non-binary anion thing. So I think due to time, I'm just draw a picture for you. And then, this is station Q working on. So let me tell you what it is, and then I will conclude. So, if you take four anions in 5-half, actually, if you take 5-half, and the elementary excitation, and the theory predicts that if you four of them inside the Fresnel quantum Hall liquid, and normally for a quantum system, if you give it this configuration, there will be a unique ground state. Most physical system has a unique ground state. For this particular case, the theory predicts that there are two of them, which means the ground state manifold is C2. Okay. So that's the prediction of the theory. And now they have two bases, Psi1 and Psi2. And now you see the following. Suppose my system starts with Psi1. Okay? And then I do this motion. And there's something I didn't mention, which is very important, called the energy gap, which means I do this slowly, it will be always inside the ground state. So that means if I start with Psi1, and we'll come back, it's really come back the same thing. So So therefore, still in the ground state here, but now it's a possible linear combination because it does not necessarily go back to either one. So therefore, it's go back to a linear combination. But now if you do from this one, you get another possible linear combination. Now you see, if you braid two particles, you don't get a number. You get a matrix. And in this case, 2 by 2. A matrix can be non-abelian. So that's the word non-abelian anion. So therefore, the prediction is in 5/2, there are this particle, which is called sigma particle, they will be a non-abelian anions. And that's leading to money spin on for experimental verification that this is the case. And once you have this, I think I'm short of time, so I will just jump to the conclusion that once you have that, you can do quantum computation, use this non-abelian anion. Basically, what you do is the following. You start with no particle, a pure fluid. And then you create this non-abelian anions. And there's a prediction also, as this number of anions go, n, and then the dimension of the Hilbert space for the ground state goes like square root 2 to the n. It's exponential growth. And then you can encode information into this big Hilbert space. And the first thing you get is a stable quantum memory. And the reason for quantum computation in our reality is that, you know, most quantum systems just die before you can do anything to it. And this quantum Hall state is extremely stable, you know, stay there for months, do nothing. So that will give you a quantum memory. And then what you can do is you can take two particles and let them braid each other. As you see that when you braid them, they change the ground state. And that's a process of information. And once you come back, and then you can fuse them, and it depends on all the fusion result, and you can do anything you want a quantum computer can do. That's a theorem we proved, actually. Anything a quantum computer can do, if you take SU2 level 3, you just do this process, free particle, braid them, annihilate. And that can accomplish anything a quantum computer can do. So with this, I think I will just conclude that that's basically you know, the interest for top particle phase of matter. I have one thing I want to say, actually, which is very important, which is, you know, what's the future, at least what I'm interested in. So we want a table of top particle phase of matter. We want to classify like the free fermions. We want to know every dimension and what they are. And if you think about it, if we miss something, I think there's a famous line, due to Wheeler, which is all physics is geometry. And now you can ask the question, you're talking about top particle quantum field theory, what's the geometry? And actually, I think that's the most important next step to make any real progress, which is, where's the missing geometry? And it will be quantum geometry. And then very recently, there's a paper due to a very famous kind of metaphysicist, Duncan. He claimed, which I tend to believe or agree, so far the story is only half of the story. And there's another half which is missed, which is geometry. And I can ask Xianzhe to help me on the paper about all these metrics and the curvature. Anyway, so I think I will stop here.
Classification that you discussed, right? How strongly does it depend on the fact that those wave functions that you wrote are ground states?
You mean the classification for anionic system?
Yes.
Okay, so let me I didn't talk but so this is the table which I did with Erica Ruwell, a former postdoc and Richard Stone. Probably people actually, Martin must know his father, Robert Stone. So this is his son, Richard. He was so tired of being a professor, so he created RISE, and he went to ASA, San Diego. But before he quit, we wrote this paper. So I have to say what I classified is not really, you know, it's hard to say what is classified top particle phase of matter. What I really classify are top particle quantum field theories. And now I ask, you know, what's the connection between top particle quantum field theory and wave functions? Xiaogao Wen and I have a very good match, actually, as a theory. Basically, you start with the wave function. you can deduce a lot of information about top particle quantum field theory. So it's not a complete answer, but it's pretty much the following. You start with this, just a function, a polynomial function. And then you can deduce something like how many particle type or something like that. And then what you deduce, actually you deduce a conformal field theory. And then from there, then there's a big jump, which is conformal field theory equal TKFT. But that step is pretty, almost rigorous, actually. So that's the connection. Any other questions? This table, of course, there are lots of information I didn't explain because I don't have time. So, I should probably say one thing, which is it's not fair to compare this table with Kitaev's table. The point is that this is a much harder classification in the sense. One thing we learn in K-theory is that you can stabilize. You know, you really take difference and stabilize. So Kitaev, when he introduced the equivalence relation, he allowed you to stabilize. And if you do the same thing for 2D theory, if you want to stabilize, you have to go to something called weight group. And this is actually an idea due to Drinfeld and Kitaev, which is you should consider two TKFT modulo something called a quantum double called Drinfeld center. And then the equivalent class is much simpler. All the 2 plus 1 TKFTs will form after this equivalent relation module Drinfeld center will become a abelian group. And then you can ask, what is this abelian group? And I kind of driven out of the field in the sense of classification by Drinfeld and his collaborators. They wrote like 200 pages papers, made huge progress on this program, which is how to classify them. So basically, here's the philosophy for, at least from my read from Drinfeld. A 2 plus 1 top particle quantum field theory has an algebraic data, which is a modular category. A modular category is a quantum generalization of a finite group. So therefore, anything you want to do for finite group can be translated into modular category. And they are developing basically all the interesting theory parallel to finite groups. And there's no way for me to keep up with them.
Let's thank Fernando for one.